And it's here now, finally, after months of hearing from pundits and politicians, and us, the American people, have their say. Democrats hoping to change the course and take the House. Republicans hoping to keep the Senate and stay the course that the president has laid out since 2016. It is a big day. In some parts of Georgia, where there's a hot governor's race, the wait at polling places was 3 hours long this morning. People had to leave. So what should we be looking for as day goes into night? NPR national political correspondent Mara Liasson is here. Hi, Mara.
Hi there.
And just your overarching thought about this day and the turnout we're seeing?
Well, that's the most significant big news about today. We might be on track to have the biggest turnout midterm election since 1966, and
wow,
that would be really something. And that would probably be good for Democrats because usually they stay home in midterms and Republicans are very reliable voters. So it sounds like what we're hearing anecdotally around the country, big long lines, lots of minorities, lots of millennials. Hmm. That could change the look of the midterm electorate.
Well, and as we know, anything can happen. We want everybody to just go and vote in whatever way they want. But what should we be watching? We're told, for instance, to watch in Kentucky a race pitting third-term Republican Andy Barr against the Democrat and military vet Amy McGrath. There's two Virginia races to watch, New Jersey's third. Which races do you think and why?
Well, the House races that I think are important to watch, I think that Kentucky one is important. First of all, the polls close there at 6 o'clock, so at least it's an early one. But you want to look at districts that should be Republican. In other words, that's a Republican district. If Amy McGrath, who's a vet, can win, that might signal that there's a blue wave. If you look at some of the Virginia races, for instance, those polls close at 7 o'clock. Dave Bratt versus Spanberger, that's another district that has been Republican for an incredibly long time. Remember, Dave Bratt was the guy who pulled off the incredible feat of defeating Eric Cantor, the majority leader, the Republican majority leader, in a primary. If that goes Democratic, that will tell you something.
That's Virginia's
10th.
There are two. Yep. Mm-hmm.
Right. There are two races in New York, upstate New York, Brindisi versus Claudia Tenney, who's the Republican incumbent. There's a race on Staten Island. You want to look at races that should be Republican. And if Republicans are having a hard time hanging on to them, then you know something's going on.
Yeah, the New Jersey's third, which people are looking at, is the incumbent Tom MacArthur and the Democrat Andy Kim. Florida's 26th, Republican Carlos Curbelo in a tight race with the Democrat Debbie McCarthy Powell.
Now, that would be a good test of whether a Republican, Curbelo, who has distanced himself from Trump, he's done a very different approach than most Republicans. He's actually distanced himself from Trump. He is Hispanic in a Hispanic district. If he can hang on, it shows you that there is a path for people who are not huge Trump fans in the Republican Party to prevail.
And briefly, there are always seats that change hands in the midterms. So put this in context. What would be a big win for Democrats?
Well, I define success for Democrats as taking the House back and making big gains in the governor's races and state legislative races and minimizing their losses in the Senate. That's my definition of success for them.
The majority of early voters in Georgia, where there's a big governor's race, Texas, Florida, another governor's race, Tennessee, Nevada, have been women. Your thoughts on that?
Well, this is the year of the woman. I'm old enough to have covered the first one in 1992, but this one is much bigger. It really, 92 pales in comparison to this. So you have women who really have been the rocket fuel of this election. Not only have they marched and organized and gone to town meetings and voted, but they've also run. We have a record number of female candidates running for House and Senate. The vast majority of them are Democrats, but no matter what happens tonight, in January, state legislatures around the country and the Congress of the United States will look more female.
And for many in the women's races, as we've heard from their stories, it's personal. I'm thinking of the Michigan congressional candidate, Alyssa Slotkin. Her mother had died of cancer because she let her health care lapse and didn't renew it. And then Slotkin was watching on TV when her representative, Mike Bishop, was there as there was an attempt to overturn Obamacare. And she turned to her husband and said, "That's it. I'm running."
That's certainly what her ads show.
That's what the story says. Yeah.
What her ads show. That's the narrative she's telling. But that has been the Democrats' consistent message. Health care, which is amazing since they suffered because of Obamacare in two midterm elections. Now Obamacare is working for them because people do not want to lose that coverage for pre-existing conditions. And that's what repealing Obamacare without a replacement would do. And that's what all those lawsuits that the Trump administration is supporting and state attorney generals all over the country who are Republican are pursuing to try to get out of that requirement.
Well, on the Republican side and the ardent Trump supporting side, we have the constant reminder of what he calls the caravan and the wall and the situation with illegal immigrants and the ad that featured an undocumented immigrant who did kill two police. And in that ad, the president or whoever put the ad together blaming Democrats. Fox News pulling that ad, which many people thought was racist. And then you have that interview that President Trump gave with Sinclair Broadcasting. He was asked if he had a regret in this election season.
I would say tone. I would like to have a much softer tone. I feel to a certain extent I have no choice, but maybe I do. And maybe I could have been softer from that standpoint.
That's on election eve. What do you make of that?
Well, you know, I haven't read the whole transcript of that interview, but White House officials are saying that the whole transcript shows that he isn't regretful about what he's done. They felt that was taken out of context. The president isn't someone who does regrets generally. He generally doubles down. He doesn't make tactical retreats. But the fact that he was talking about having a softer tone is interesting because up until now, his strategy has been to be as divisive as possible because that's what gins up his base. That's what worked for him in 2016. And focus on issues, culture war, emotional issues like race, crime, and immigration.
We have to leave it at that. Mara Liasson, NPR national political correspondent. Thank you.
Thank you very much.